Osho, Tao, the Three Treasures, Volume 1. Talks on fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 7.
Bhagwan, writing on the utility of not being, Lao Tse says, 30 spokes unite around the nave. From their not being, loss of their individuality, arises the utility of the wheel. Mold clay into a vessel. From its not being, in the vessel's hollow, arises the utility of the vessel. Cut out doors and windows in the house wall. From their not being, empty space, arises the utility of the house. Therefore, by the existence of things we profit, and by the non-existence of things we are served.
The deepest core of being is non-being. The foundation of isness is nothingness. And when I say nothingness, I don't mean nothingness. I only mean no-thingness. Form exists on the base of the formless. The form comes out of the formless, just like waves come out of the sea. And then the form drops, dissolves into the formless again. The name arises out of the nameless, falls back, returns to the original source, becomes nameless again. Life arises out of death and moves to death again. The very basic thing to remember is that these opposites are not opposites, they are complementary. Death is not against life. And non-existence is not against existence. Non-being is not against being. There are two polarities of the same phenomena which transcends all understanding. Sometimes it expresses itself as being and sometimes as non-being. But it is the same that expresses in the both. This has to be understood as deeply as possible, because your whole sadhana, the whole effort towards ultimate understanding will depend on it. Unless you are ready to become non-being, you will never become a real authentic being. It looks like a paradox. Jesus says to his disciples, unless you lose yourself, you will not gain yourself. If you cling to yourself, you will be destroyed. If you don't cling, you will be saved. He is saying that if you move in non-being, only then the being is saved. In India, there exists a very old and very beautiful parable in the Upanishads. A great sage, Uddalak, was asked by his son, Swetketu, that, "Father, who I am? What it is that exists in me? I try and try. I meditate and meditate, but I cannot find it. Svetketu was a small child, but he raised a very, very difficult question. Had somebody else asked the question, Udalak would have answered easily. But how to help a child to understand? And he is asking the greatest problem that exists. Udalak had to devise, had to create a device. He said, you go there, yonder there you see the Nagrodh tree. You bring a fruit from there. The child ran. He brought a small fruit from the Nagrodh tree. The father said, now you cut it. What do you see inside it? He said, millions of small seeds. The father said, now you choose one seed and cut that seed. Now what do you see in it? He said, nothingness. The father said, out of that nothingness arises this big tree. In the seed, just at the center exists nothingness. You cut it, there is nothing. And out of that nothingness arises the being of this big tree. And the same is true with you, Svetketu, said the father. And one of the greatest sayings ever uttered by any human being was born, Tatvamasi Svetketu. That art thou. Thou art that, Svetketu. You are also that nothingness, which exists just at the heart of the seed. Unless you find this non-being within you, you will not attain to authentic truth. Then you can move in theories. Then you can philosophize. But you will not realize. The boy meditated on this nothingness. He became very silent. He contemplated. He enjoyed this nothingness. He felt it very deeply, but then again a question arose. After a few days, he came to the father again. He said, I can feel, but things are still not very clear. They are vague, as if a mist surrounds everything. I can see that out of nothingness everything is born. But how nothingness mixes with thingness? How isness mixes with nothingness? How being mixes with non-being? They are paradoxical. The father was again in difficulty. Whenever children raise questions, it is very difficult to answer them. Almost 99% of answers that grown-ups give to children are false. Just face-saving devices. You deceive. But Udalak didn't want to deceive this child. And his curiosity was not only a curiosity. It was deep inquiry. He was really concerned. His body may have been that of a child, but his soul was ancient. He must have struggled in the past, tried hard to penetrate into the mystery. He was not just curious. He was authentically concerned. It was not just a vagrant question in the mind. It was very deep-rooted. The father said, you go and bring a cup of water. The boy fetched a cup of water. Then the father said, now you go and bring a little sugar. And he brought the sugar, and the father said, mix them both. The sugar dissolved into the water. And the father said, now, can you separate the sugar from the water? The boy said, now it is impossible. I cannot even see where the sugar has gone. The father said, you try. The boy looked into it, but he couldn't see any sugar. It has dissolved. It has become water. Then the father said, you taste it. The boy tasted, it was sweet. And the father said, just like this. You may not be able to decide what is being and what is non-being. They are meeting into each other just like water and sugar. But you can taste and you can know that this water contains sugar. You may not be able to separate them right now. In fact, nobody can ever separate them because they are not separate. Water and sugar can be separated. That is just a device to make the child understand. But non-being and being cannot be separated. Life and death cannot be separated. It is impossible. They are not separate. How can you separate them? They always exist together. In fact, to say that they exist together is not to say it rightly, because the very word together carries the concept of two-ness. They are not two. They are one. They only appear two. From where you have come, have you ever pondered over this very basic problem? From where have you come? Nothingness. Where are you moving? Where are you going? Nothingness. From nothingness to nothingness. And just in between two nothingnesses arises being. The river of being flows between two banks of nothingnesses. Being is beautiful, but non-being is also beautiful. Life is good, but death is also good. Because life cannot exist without death. Ordinarily, you think that death is against life, it destroys. No, you are wrong. Without death, life cannot exist for a single moment. It supports. It is the very base. Because you can die, that's why you can live. Life and death are not two things, but two wings. Two wings of the same phenomena. Science was always thinking that religion talks in paradoxes, is irrational, illogical. But just within few years, in science, particularly in physics, a phenomena has arisen which can be very helpful to understand this meeting of being and non-being. The phenomena is called the black hole. Science has come somehow to feel that in space there exist few spaces which are holes, black holes, non-beings. In the beginning it was difficult to conceive it. But now by and by the concept is becoming clear and clear. Because science also feels that everything exists with its opposite. How existence can exist without non-existence? Life exists with death. Love exists with hate. Compassion with anger. How can existence just exist without non-existence being there, somehow involved in it? It has to be there. They searched. And now, a man has got a Nobel Prize on the discovery of the black holes. The black holes are non-existential holes in space, where nothing exists, not even space. And they are very dangerous phenomena, because if something goes into a black hole, it simply disappears, because the black hole turns everything into non-existence. The discovery of the black hole has solved many mysteries. Just a few years before it happened in America, one aeroplane belonging to the army was flying in the sky. There was communication with the plane. Then suddenly the communication stopped. Another plane was sent to search for the last plane. What has happened? Exactly after the same time gap, after half an hour, the second plane went out of communication. Then it was dangerous. Then three more planes together were sent in the same direction to find the last two ones. Exactly after half an hour, those three planes were lost. Communication was broken. And never anything has been heard about those five planes. What happened of them? They have left not a single trace behind. If they had fallen, then they would have found. They cannot go on flying forever and ever. What happened? Now it is suspected. Suddenly they came across a black hole. They simply entered into the black hole and disappeared. A black hole means the power of non-existence, the power of non-being. If you are caught into it, simply everything disappears. Not a trace is left behind, because matter becomes unmatter. You unmaterialize. You have heard the word materialization. You have heard about miracles, that there have been people who can materialize things out of nothing. But you have not heard the word unmaterialization, that things can go simply into unmatter, simply disappear. It has happened many times. Sometimes a ship carrying 700 people simply disappeared, such a big ship. When it passed the last port, everything was okay. It never reached to the next port. And the distance was not very far, very big. The distance was very small. If it has drowned, then 700 people on board, someone must have survived. If nobody has survived, then the skeleton of the ship would have found. But nothing has been found ever. They simply disappeared. They must have come across a floating black hole. That is happening every day. But when things happen every day, you become oblivious of them. Suddenly a man dies. What has happened? He has entered the black hole. Just a minute before, he was okay, breathing, talking. alive, conscious, and just a second afterwards, nothing is left, just a deteriorating body. What has happened? Something has gone into non-existence. Death is the black hole. Scientists say that stars are also born and die. They live millions of years. But that is not the question. They are born from where they come. Right now, many stars are being born, just as many children are being born in maternity wards. Many stars are being born. They are coming out of nothingness. No matter existed before. It was a vast space. Then suddenly a nebula comes into being. A smoke arises out of nothingness. The smoke starts gathering, condensing. It starts becoming more and more solid. It takes millions of years, just like it takes 9 months for a child to be born. It takes millions of years for nothingness to become condensed and become a star. Then for millions of years the star remains alive. Then it dies. Then again it disperses by and by, becomes less and less solid, vaporous, smoke. For millions of years it remains on the deathbed. And then one day the star has disappeared. The place where the star once was now will be a black hole. It has become non-existential. Now if you come across this black hole, you will be simply absorbed. When the black hole absorbed the whole star, such a vast phenomena. Our sun is a mediocre star. It is 60,000 times bigger than the earth. If our sun, 60,000 times bigger than the earth, dies, it will die one day. The scientists say it seems near about 4,000 years more it can be alive, because it is already old, ill, has to be hospitalized. But there exists no hospital for stars. It is dying. 4,000 years it will take, then one day it will be no more there. First the light will disappear, then the matter will disappear, and then it will become a black hole. The space where once the sun was and now no more is, now it is a tremendous whirlpool of nothingness. If the earth is caught into it, finished, in a single moment, it will crush you, that nothingness to nothingness. And bigger stars, this star is a mediocre. Millions of big suns exist in existence. Many of them have gone dead already. To go into the space travel, to go to the moon is nothing. But once we get out of the solar system, then there will be trouble. Because then your ship can come across any hole and you cannot know beforehand. Your ship can be simply absorbed. And nothing will be heard ever again. These black holes are the other part of existence. They are non-existence. And it has to be so because existence has to be balanced by non-existence. Laos believes in non-existence tremendously. He is the first to bring the utility of non-existence to its ultimate glory. Of course, he didn't know about black holes. Otherwise, he must have talked. He is a simple man living in a village, a simple life of a peasant, Ra, simple, not very much cultivated and civilized. He was against civilization. He was for nature. He has only simple similes, the wheel. He says, the nerve of the wheel, the hub of the wheel is empty, but the whole wheel depends on it. It is called the nerve of the wheel. Why? Because it is just like the nerve that exists in man. Just near your nerve, Japanese say there exists a point called hara. That hara is the black hole in your body. Japan has discovered, following Lao Tse's idea, that somewhere in the body death must have a home. Death doesn't come from the outside. It is not an accident, as people think. As people say, death is coming. No, death is not coming. Death is growing within you. It is not that somewhere on the life's path you meet death suddenly. If it was so, then methods could have been devised to avoid death, to deceive, or not to go to that point where death waits for you, or to bypass, or send somebody else instead of you. There was a possibility if death was an outward phenomena happening to you from the outside, then there was possibility. But death is carried within you like a seed. It comes into existence when you come into existence. In fact, it existed even before you. You have come out of it. Death must have somewhere a point within your body. Then Japanese searched into the body, that where the black hole exists in the body, it is just below the navel. 2 inches below the navel exists the point of death. It is a very subtle point. You must have heard the word harakiri. That word comes from hara. Hara means the black hole inside the body. And harakiri means suicide. To use that black hole. Japanese have become very efficient in killing themselves. Nobody can kill himself so easily as Japanese. Because they have found the exact point of death. They simply, with a small knife, they penetrate the hara. Not even a single drop of blood comes out. The suicide is bloodless. And no pain at all is felt. No suffering. And life disappears. They have touched the black hole in the body. The point of death directly. If you cut your throat, you will die. But there will be much suffering. Because from the throat to the hara, there is much distance. The distance death will have to travel. So if a head is cut, if somebody's head is cut, the body remains alive for a few minutes. Goes on trembling and throbbing. Because you have not penetrated the hara directly. Japanese can kill themselves so easily and so silently that when you see a man who has done harakiri, who has committed suicide, you will not see any sign on his face of death. His face will look as alive as ever. He simply disappeared into the black hole with no struggle. That hara in the body is non-being. It is absence. It is a nothingness. And the whole practice of Taoists is to be alert of the hara. They have created a different type of breathing for it. They call it belly breathing. And you cannot find a more silent man than a Taoist who has been doing belly breathing and has become attuned with it. You breathe from the chest. All over the world, chest breathing exists, which is a shallow breathing. Maybe it is because of the fear of death that you don't breathe by the belly. Because when you breathe by the belly, the breath goes deep down to the hara, then you touch death. Afraid of death, you practice shallow breathing. Remember, whenever you are afraid, your breathing will become shallow. Whenever fear takes you, you will not be able to have deep breathing. Immediately the breathing becomes shallow. Because every fear is basically fear of death. You may not be consciously aware of it, but your body knows where death is. Don't go that way. Your body is wise, wiser than your mind. Has to be, because mind is a very newcomer. Body has existed longer than mind, has passed through millions of lives, mindless lives, and has accumulated much wisdom in it. Whenever you are afraid, you stop breathing. Or you breathe very shallow, afraid to come nearer to death. A deep breathing absorbs death into life. A deep breathing creates a bridge between life and death. The fear disappears. If you can breathe deep down through the belly, then fear will disappear completely. That's why Japanese can commit suicide so easily. Nobody can commit in the world. Looks like a game. They can commit suicide for such simple things that nobody can believe that what was the need. Because they know, oh, life and death are not separate, they are one. Death is also life, the other aspect of the same coin. It is rest. If you deeply breathe, you will feel a rest flowing all over your body, a relaxation, a non-tense state of affairs. Have you ever watched a small child breathing? Then he breathes by the belly. You can watch and you will see. That's how Tao wanted, Lao Tse wanted everybody to breathe. That is the Taoist yoga. Just like a child, the belly goes up and down. And the chest remains absolutely unaffected, as if the chest has nothing to do with breathing, and it has nothing to do with breathing. But there are many problems, the fear of death. You cannot breathe deeply, the hara is there. And just near the hara is the life point, which you call the sex center. That too is a fear. If you breathe deeply, then sex arises. So people who have become afraid of sex, they cannot breathe deeply. You deep breathe and immediately you will feel suppressed sex has become again alive. It starts flowing into your veins and into your blood. And of course, it is as it should be. The center of life should be just near the center of death. Hara, the center of death, and sex, the center of life, are just so near, so close, they almost touch each other. Two aspects of the same coin. That's why in sex also people are afraid. Because the death starts throbbing with sex. A real sexual experience is also an experience of death. You die. That's why people are so much afraid of sex, so much afraid of women. I have not come across many people who are not afraid of women. Fear. Woman has given birth. She must be carrying your death also. Look at Hindus' conception of Kali, the mother Kali. She is both life and death, the giver and taker. A beautiful woman, but black like death. A beautiful woman, but very dangerous, so dangerous that she is dancing on the body of her own husband, almost killing him. Shiva is lying there, and she is dancing on the body of the Shiva, almost crushing the body. And she has a garland of skulls. And in one of his hands, she has a cut head, freshly cut. Blood dropping. In the West, they cannot understand why a mother should be so dangerous. Why beautiful woman should be depicted in such a dangerous and terrible and horrible way. Hindus know better. They have penetrated the mystery of life better than anybody else. They know that sex and death are so close almost, they are one. And when the sex starts throbbing and spreading its waves on your body, the death center also starts throbbing. That's why orgasm has become just a word. You don't achieve orgasm in sex. You cannot. Unless you accept death, you cannot achieve orgasm. Because orgasm means losing all control. Orgasm means losing all mind. Orgasm means the whole body throbs in the ecstasy. Every fiber of the body and every cell of it. The whole body celebrates in an unknown bliss. And the mind is no more the controller and the manipulator. Man can achieve only a local orgasm, which is nothing but ejaculation, not an orgasm at all. Because if orgasm takes over, then you are no more there. You are possessed by life and death, both. And the fear takes over. Women, for the thousands of years, have not achieved orgasm. Even now in India, I don't see that even 2% women achieve orgasm. Just for a few years, man has become aware that women can also achieve orgasm. Otherwise, it has been a suppressed thing. Because if the woman achieves orgasm, she will go so mad, she will become Kali. She will be so mad with ecstasy, she may start dancing on your chest. And she will be no more in herself. She will be something, a natural force, a whirlwind, a storm. she will laugh and cry, and when nobody knows what will happen. The whole neighborhood will know that a woman has achieved orgasm. And sex is such a private affair. We have made it such a hidden and secretive thing in darkness. Not even the partners see each other. And the woman has been trained to remain absolutely passive, non-moving, because of the fear. Because once she knows the beauty of going completely mad, then she will be uncontrollable. It will be impossible for any man to satisfy any woman, because a woman can achieve multiple orgasms. A man can achieve only one orgasm. A woman can achieve within minutes at least 6 orgasms, 6 to 60. And it will be impossible for any man to satisfy a woman. And she will go so mad. And she is so natural, she can go. It is better to suppress her. Sex has been suppressed as part of death. Only two things have been suppressed in the world: sex and death. And this has been my observation, that whenever a culture suppresses sex, it does not suppress death so much, because there is no need. Only the suppression of sex will do. Whenever a culture suppresses death, it does not bother to suppress sex. There is no need. Only the suppression of death will do. If you suppress one, both are suppressed. Because both are together, and both have to be freed. But then, you live tremendously, but you always live on the verge of death. You become a being, but you are always looking into the non-being. And that's the beauty of it, the horror also. In fact, all natural beautiful things are also terrible. God is not only beautiful, God is also terrible. He is not only a mystery, He is not only mysterium, He is also tremendum. He is not only life, He is also death. And once you suppress your own being, or your non-being, you drop the bridges. Then you cannot reach to the existence. Be like the existence only, then the bridge is there. Then you are connected and joined with it. In the West, after Freud, they have allowed sex a little freedom. But now they have become more suppressive of death. In the West, nobody talks about death. As if it doesn't happen. And even professionals exist who work on the dead body so that it appears alive, painted, colored. A woman dies. Her face is painted, lipstick used, beautiful clothes, beautiful coffin, and she is carried as if she has gone into deep sleep, not dead. This is the fear of death. You don't want to look into the face of it. Cemeteries are built outside of the town, and you put beautiful marble stones on them. You decorate them. You decorate death so that you can avoid it, so that there is no need to encounter it. And death is the very source of life. Use life, use death also. That is the message. Use being, use non-being also. And don't be afraid of anything. Because nothing can be taken away that is yours. Nothing can be taken away that you have. And that which you don't have, you don't have. It has already been taken away. You cannot carry it for long. And if you carry, you simply carry a burden. Try to understand Lao Tzu's sayings, the utility of non-being. 30 spokes unite around the nave. From their not being, lose a loss of their individuality, arises the utility of the wheel. A wheel moves because in the nave, in the center, there is emptiness. If there is no emptiness in the center, the wheel cannot move. It moves on emptiness. Mold clay into a vessel. From its non-being, in the vessel's hollow, arises the utility of the vessel. Cut out doors and windows in the house wall. From their not being, empty space arises the utility of the house. Therefore, by the existence of things we profit, and by the non-existence of things we are served. This is how one can become total and whole. And to be whole is holy for Lao Tzu. There is no other holiness. It is not a cultivation of religious ritual. And it is not even a cultivation of morality. It has nothing to do with character. Holiness means a life that is whole. A life that has not denied anything. A life that knows no denial. A life that has not said no to anything. A life that accepts the opposites. A life that doesn't choose. A life that is choiceless is holy. Holy comes from the same word, same root as whole. If you are whole, you are holy. And if you are whole, it means you are at the same time life and death also. You don't hide the fact of death. And you don't try to hide your inner hollowness, emptiness. You don't try to fill it by rubbish. You enjoy the purity of emptiness also. Nothing is as pure as emptiness. Nothing can be. Because whenever there is something, impurity enters. Only emptiness can be absolutely pure. But we are so afraid of emptiness. People come to me and they say, it is so difficult to be alone because one starts feeling one's emptiness. Then you seek friends. Then you seek lovers, and the whole effort from the very beginning is doomed. Because the man who is afraid of his emptiness cannot really love. He is afraid. Deep down there is fear. How can he love? When he moves and pretends that he is in love with somebody, he is just trying to escape from himself, his own emptiness. He is trying to forget that somewhere inside there is emptiness and nothingness. He is trying to fill that emptiness by somebody's presence. and the other is also doing the same. So almost 99 love affairs on this earth are false. Sooner or later you come to realize that they have been deceptive. Lovers come to realize that they have been deceived, fooled. But they think that the other has fooled them. They never think that they have also done the same thing to the other. And they don't understand the misery of human beings and their stupidity. If they understand their own stupidity, what they are doing, they will be able to feel compassion for all. When you cannot be alone, silent, that means you are afraid of your loneliness. You want to fill it by somebody. You pretend the other is also doing the same with you. He cannot be alone. Two persons who cannot be alone are trying to be together. Now this is going to be a miserable phenomena, a hell. If you cannot love yourself in your loneliness, how can the other can love you? How can you expect anybody to love you if you cannot love yourself? If you are so fed up with your loneliness, sooner or later the other will also be fed up with your loneliness. You cannot fill it. It is something that cannot be filled. It is something that exists as part of your being. You cannot fill it. It has to remain empty. It will remain empty. All efforts fail to fill it. So the first thing is to get in tune with this emptiness, to allow it, to live it. Don't suppress and don't escape. Feel it, enjoy it, and by and by you will understand the beauty of it. Once you understand the beauty of your loneliness, it becomes aloneness. Then it is no more empty. Then it is no more nothingness. Then it is a purity. It is so pure that it is formless. Always remember the difference between aloneness and loneliness. Loneliness is like a wound. Loneliness means you are missing the other. Loneliness means you are thinking of the other constantly. You are hankering for the other constantly. The other is in your fantasy, in your mind, in your dreams. The other is not real, imaginary, but the other is there. And because it is not real, you feel lonely. When you start feeling your aloneness, the other has dropped from your mind completely. It no more shadows in your dreams. It no more touches your purity. You are happy with yourself. You are ecstatic with yourself. You are enjoying yourself. Now for the first time, you are in tune with your being and with your non-being. You are whole. Now you can be in love. Now love can flow. But then love will be a sharing, not an escape. Now you can go and share your being and your non-being also. Now you can share your wholeness. Now anybody who is open, you can allow to join your openness. Now you can become partners of an eternal journey. This love will not be possessive because you are ready to be alone anytime. In fact, you are happy in being alone. You are happy in being together. You don't choose. Both are good. Whatsoever the case, you feel happy. Your happiness cannot be desired now. The other can enjoy it and share it, but cannot destroy it. You can share and you can distribute it, and you can give it to the whole world. You have so much of it. You can bless the whole world with it. And it goes on growing. The more you give, the more you find it is there. Now you are not a miser. Now your being is not constipated. Now you are not closed, not afraid. You can give, you can say, because you know your non-being also. Now you are not afraid of being a non-being. Now you know definitely that is part of your being and the beauty of your being. It is your inner space where you can move. The inner shrine, the real temple. The temple exists in you. If you search your body, it exists near the navel. That's why Hindus became navel gazers. People laugh in the West whenever somebody meditates. They say, have you become a navel gazer? Hindus know in the body the point of death that Japanese call Hara, Hindus call the temple of the body. They close their eyes and they bring their consciousness to the temple of the body. Your body is a temple because it carries you. And from that temple you enter deeper, and then you find your non-being. That too is a greater temple of being. The body becomes the door. And when you reach your inner shrine, surrounded by a non-being, on the throne is divine. That is the center of non-being. Just the other day somebody was asking how it is possible that the inner emptiness has a center. Yes, it has only the center and no circumference. Center everywhere and circumference nowhere. This is illogical. Because the logic itself is illogical and irrelevant to life. Life has its own logic. And the base of the life's logic is that opposites are not opposites, they are complementaries. Emptiness has a center. Just the reverse is the case. You see a wheel. In the center there is emptiness, the hub. The wheel is matter. The hub is non-matter. Just the reverse is the case when you move in. In the hub is the being, and the wheel is of non-being. Non-being is just the aura of your being, the light of your being, the space of your being, the territory of your being. And it is beautiful because it is absolutely empty. It is pure because it is absolutely empty. Don't be afraid of it. In the beginning it looks like death. If you allow it, it becomes resurrection. After every inner death there is resurrection. That is the meaning of the story of resurrection in Jesus' life. Not that he physically resurrected. He passed through death, the cross, and he came to the innermost life. You have to pass the emptiness, that is the cross. Everybody has to pass it. And nobody else can carry that cross for you. You have to carry your own cross. And unless you pass it, you will not reach the innermost center. At that innermost center, you are no more an individual. You have become God Himself. Hindus say, Aham Brahmasmi. Hindus say, I am the God Himself. This saying comes from those who have reached to the innermost point, who have passed the non-being part, and who have come to the shrine where God is, and you are not. But we are trying to escape from it. We don't know how to use it. If you are empty and you have nothing to do, you start doing anything. You put on the radio or the TV, or you study the newspaper, or you read the novel, or you go to the hotel, or you go to the club. You do many things. You cannot do nothing. You can do anything whatsoever. People have the idea that if you cannot do something relevant, even do something irrelevant, but don't sit idle. Sit empty. Just sitting empty, one comes to the greatest encounter of life. One encounters one's own death. If you can pass that, if you can pass that dancing, happy, enjoying it, if you can be nourished even by emptiness, then nothing can destroy you. You have attained to the eternal, the non-destructible, the deathless. That's why my insistence is always on a dancing meditation. It is not only an outward dance. The outward is nothing but a training for the inner. You dance outwardly. You go on dancing outwardly. By and by, inner dance arises. And then you can dance inwardly and move towards the innermost center, the very core of being. Remember, death can be crossed only by dance. Death can be won over only by a deep laughter. One can carry one's cross only happily, blissfully, ecstatically. Sad, serious, it will become such a burden. Your own emptiness will become such a burden that you would like to escape from it. You will come out and move into the world. Learn how to dance outwardly, just as a training, as a discipline, so that inner dance becomes possible. It is a mood, a climate. Dance is a climate. It has nothing to do with any activity of dancing. It is a climate, an inner bubbling of bliss, an inner throbbing of bliss. Only on that boat, the part which is very, very difficult for you to cross can be crossed. Otherwise, one escapes out. The moment you face your inner emptiness, you escape. You become so scared to death. That's why so many people never think about themselves. They think of the whole world. They are worried for the whole world, but they never think about themselves, because that point seems to be touching a wound inside, they are afraid. Don't be afraid, because existence of things is good. You can profit out of it, but it is not enough. Unless you learn how to be served by emptiness also, you have not learned the art, the total art. If you know only how to live, you know only the half art. If you know also how to die, then you know the whole art. And the whole art will make you whole. Remember, until you die, you cannot be reborn. As you are, you have to pass through death. And you are clinging too much to life. That won't help. Death will come. But death comes in two ways. The one way, the ordinary way it comes, you are clinging to life and it comes as the enemy. You fight with it. You resist with it. You do everything that you can do to avoid it. But how can you avoid it? The day you were born, death became certain. Every birth carries the seed of death. In fact, in life, nothing else is certain than death. Everything is at the most probable, but death is certain. It will happen. You can avoid it, you can postpone it a little, but that doesn't change the situation. It will happen. The one way to face the death is as the enemy, as 99% people face it and miss it. Because of their enmity, they cannot use it, they cannot be profited by it, and they cannot be served by death. There is another way to accept it as the friend, to accept it as the innermost part of your being, to enjoy it, to welcome it, to be ready for it, and when it comes, to embrace it. Suddenly, the quality of the death changes. It is no more death, it becomes a door. It no more destroys you, on the contrary, you are served by it. It leads you to the deathless. Die, you will have to die. But die gracefully. I am not saying that die like a stoic. I am not saying die like a very controlled man. No. I am saying gracefully, beautifully. As a friend comes, knocks at your door, and you are happy. And you embrace the friend. And you invite him. And you have been waiting for him so long. If you can love death, you become deathless. If you can understand non-being, then your being becomes the very ground of beinghood, the very ground of God. If you can love non-being, then nothing can destroy you. You have transcended time and space. Then you have become one with the total. And this is what holiness is. To become whole is to be holy. Enough for today.